Time to take a look at your digital camera and mine as well. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, has taught photography at Western Technical College in La Crosse. In the lifelong learning program, he's created a mixed media CD. It's called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And it's a good one. He's also written articles for Shutterbug and eDigital Photo and Imaging. And really pleased to have him back. He was with us once before. We had a great time. And he did too, I think. So we're happy to have him back to answer your questions about digital cameras. Maybe you want to buy one. Maybe you already have one and want to learn a little bit more about it. Or maybe you're taking some pictures and they're not turning out the way you'd like them to turn out. Well, any of those and even more, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Jack, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Yes, thank you for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Well, it was a lot of fun last time. I know it is going to be a lot of fun this time, too. And here we got Mother's Day coming up, Father's Day coming up, graduations coming up. Are there people who you should not be giving a digital camera to as a gift?
Absolutely. I just put a little article up on my website, so if you want to print this out and give it to the person in your family who's saying, let's give so-and-so a digital camera, they may want to read this first, because they're not for everybody, at least not at this stage of the game. They are really something more for the person who is intrigued by technology and is a bit of what you might call an enthusiast. And frankly, there's a lot of snap shooters out there who simply are much happier going to the drugstore and buying a disposable film camera and just throwing it away when they're done.
Well, by the way, what's your website?
So, acpress.com, acpress.com. And then if you click on the red button that says Other Articles, you'll see an article right below the one on the free software that says, you know, maybe you shouldn't buy a digital camera as a gift.
Okay. Well, all right. There'll be a lot of people clicking out of that, I'll bet. Oh, man. Suzanne in North Branch, Minnesota, actually has a question for you, Jack. So let's go there. Suzanne,
right. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I have used a digital camera for many years, and it was I had a real nice, you know, more professional kind of one. And then I decided to upgrade, and I decided to get this SLR that has the, you know, interchangeable lenses. And I've been taking pictures with that, and they're just not true to color. They tend, you know, the yellows tend to be more, you know, deep. And is it the lens, or is it the camera setting on there?
Well, we have to kind of dig down a little deeper on that one. How are you viewing the pictures? On what are you, are the prints are on the screen or
on my computer screen?
Okay, it's possible that the so-called color space of the camera is not matching that of your computer. A lot of professional photographers go to a great deal of length to match the camera color to the monitor and then also match it to the printer so that the things are consistent. A couple of things you may want to check. On your digital camera, there is something called the automatic white balance, which is supposed to correct the color, just like a video camera does. Sometimes that gets turned off, and if it gets turned off, you have some other selections, tungsten light, fluorescent light, daylight, shade. If that was accidentally turned off, it's possible that you're actually having the color balance of the camera set incorrectly.
Okay, perfect. I'll check that.
Now, what are you using, a flash, or where are you taking the pictures?
These are mostly the ones that the color doesn't turn out quite right. It's usually indoor pictures, and the camera that I have has like an automatic little, you know, if it needs a flash, it pops up.
Mm-hmm. You know? It's possible that the automatic white balance is turned off because indoors, tungsten light bulbs tend to look orange, just like they used to do on film.
Yeah.
And overhead lights, fluorescent lights, tend to look green. So the first thing I would do would be check the color setting on the camera. And then failing that, you know, if you get out one of the various editors on your computer, you can adjust the color afterwards. But I'm suspecting there's something set on the camera incorrectly.
Perfect. I'll check that. I really appreciate your help.
Okay, sure.
All right. Thanks a lot, Suzanne, for calling. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Up until now, they're talking about color a little bit here. There's been a wider range of colors or tones in film than in the digital form, frankly. Are there more tricks to overcome this, dynamic range, I think is what it's called?
Yeah, it's getting better. This is something that a lot of folks don't realize. But back in the days when we used film cameras, some of you may remember that you could really over- and underexpose film, and it would still turn out fairly well. But if you shot slides and you were a little bit off, they either come out washed out or they come out too dark. And the typical digital camera really has an exposure range closer to a slide than regular negative film.
Okay.
And this dynamic range means, like, the darkest dark and the whitest white are pretty close together. There isn't a lot of variation between them. And so there's a couple of things you can do. Number one, you have to live with it for the time being. And in most cases, for snapshots and typical photographs that most of us look at, frankly, they look pretty good.
Yeah.
But if you're getting into fine art photography, fall foliage, scenics, things like that, then you have to be a bit more careful. One thing you may try to do is use the plus-minus exposure control, which is built into most cameras, that will shift the exposure up or down a little bit to try to get more of the predominant tones centered in the spectrum, as it were. The other thing you can do is, once you have the picture, there's a variety of editing programs, and one of them is free. It's called the Graphic Image Manipulation Program, or GIMP. It's a freeware program. There's no charge to it. They actually have a thing called Levels, where you can take a little eyedropper control, and you can touch it to, for example, the blackest part of the picture or the part you want to be blackest, and then it tries to arrange all the other tones in order, and you can even shift the tones back and forth till you get what looks more like what you thought it should be. And it really does work.
Wow. And so that's online. Anybody can download that.
Yeah. If you go to the website, acpress.com, there is an article I wrote on free software, and it does list the link to the program GIMP, G-I-M-P, or you can just go to gimp.org and download it for PC or Mac or Linux, and that does have that. There are commercial programs as well that will do the same thing, Photoshop, for example, but if you want to just try it, this program is free.
Michelle in Black River Falls is up next. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about shutter lag. I don't know if it's because my camera is old, but it's an Olympus, and it's about 6 years old. And it just seems like it's taking longer and longer for it to actually take the picture. And I don't know if it's because it's old technology or if you can recommend a newer camera that doesn't take forever to take a picture.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is definitely true that the older cameras take longer from the time when you press the shutter to when the picture is taken. I was testing a camera some years ago at a mall someplace, and the sound of the autofocus locking in, to me, sounded just like the shutter going off.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, half a second later, or it took the picture, I kept dropping the camera down and taking pictures of my feet. But there's a couple of things you can do in the meantime. First is, on most cameras, if you press the shutter down halfway, it will lock in the exposure and the focus, and it'll beep, and some little light will come on if you're lucky. Then, at the so-called decisive moment, continue to press the shutter down and take the picture. As opposed to trying to do it all in one continuous movement. That's probably the first thing you can do. There shouldn't be any reason why the camera is lagging any longer than it did 6 years ago when you bought it.
Okay.
So it may just be that you're becoming more aware of the fact that there's, you know, you're trying to catch that decisive moment. But I would practice by just pressing the shutter down halfway. You should be able to know when it reaches the halfway mark, because something will beep or a light will come on to indicate the camera has locked in the exposure and is locked into focus. And then if you press the rest of the way, it should be a little bit quicker. But you are correct. The newer cameras do have a slower shutter lag time. And if you look very carefully at the specifications of the camera, that's where they will list those kind of things.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thanks
sure.
very much for calling. And all the major cameras manufacturers, I think, have come a long way on this.
They have, but you know, we have to realize that there's a tremendous amount of things the camera has to do when you press that shutter. It has to energize the sensor. Basically, it has to power up. It has to focus. It has to do all these things where, you know, on a typical little point-and-shoot camera, you've already got the shutter cocked with a spring.
Yeah.
And that's really all it does. The more professional cameras, the professional single-lens reflex cameras, are usually the quickest in terms of response. The less expensive point-and-shoots will take a bit longer.
I think you said last time you were on that what people have with this camera is now essentially a computer with a lens attached to it.
That's correct. I try to explain that to people, and that's another person that you don't want to give a digital camera to. You got someone who walks around the house going, me and computers, we don't get along. They are the wrong person. If they're having trouble understanding how to use the cell phone and the remote control on the TV set, they're not really interested in technology.
Yeah.
And you have to be almost actively interested at this point. Someday there will be a digital Instamatic, and I'm waiting for it to come out.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
I don't understand why they haven't done it so far, because I would say 80% of the average person taking pictures just wants a camera that they can point and shoot. And they've just clustered buttons all over the camera beyond any reasonable need for them.
Yeah, it does seem daunting once in a while when you look at one of these cameras. And man, oh man, oh man, I honestly don't know nearly as much about my camera as I should know.
Well, the thing is, for the past, I would say, 30 years, ever since the so-called point-and-shoot camera has come out, the manufacturers have tried to remove photographers from knowing the process.
Right.
By which the aperture and the lens openings and the shutter speeds. And all of a sudden, they're building all those things back into these new cameras, and people are going, what's an aperture? Why do I have to know about that?
Jack Zosia, our guest today, as we talk with him about digital cameras, take a look at his website, acpress.com. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. We're talking now about how to get the most out of your digital camera. Our guest, Jack Zosia, of Spring Grove, Minnesota, who has a great website, acpress.com. Take a look at that. He has a mixed media CD that he's created called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, and a whole lot more on that website. So take a look at that. But also, if you have a question for him about your digital, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, reach us at 263-1890. We'll be glad to get you on the air. And, Jack, we have Bruce from Green Bay who's been waiting a long time, so let's get Bruce on board here. Bruce, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. A follow-up to the previous question, what would be the specification you would be looking for to determine how fast this reaction time is? I don't know if it's really shutter speed. And do you have any particular makes or models of cameras that you would recommend that would be faster than others? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you very much. Yep, thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you. Generally, the term that they use is shutter lag time. And you're going to have to look in the specifications. Another good place to look, I would suggest, there is a website called Steve's Digicams that has really become a very good site for listing specifications and not just opinions. And you frequently will see comparisons of shutter lag times between leading brands and things like that. The trick is that most of the so-called consumer, the point-and-shoot cameras, the little small ones you see now for, believe it or not, I've seen some now, brand names, 7 megapixels on sale for as little as $69.
Yeah.
They simply aren't, they're not going to build the technology into those to give you the kind of rapid response that you're hoping for. You need to get into more of what you might call a prosumer category, which is going to cost a bit more money. But it's getting better constantly. Even the average point-and-shoot that a few years ago was really somewhat clumsy has now improved dramatically. So I would look at a website like Steve's Digicams. Perhaps you might want to go to Shutterbug Magazine's website, shutterbug.net. I'm afraid you're just going to have to do quite a bit of research on it and just see what goes on. The other thing you can do is go to the store where they've got them all on display, and assuming they've actually got batteries in them so you can try them out, press the shutter and see what happens.
Yeah.
I always suggest that you check a camera out in the store. Don't buy one and take it home and then press the shutter button.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Harold and Superior, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Harold.
Hi. I was just looking at your website here, Jack, and I had to just chuckle because I'm looking at the section as to what imaging on a budget, the free programs, Earth and View and Photo Filter and so on. And I use every one of them just about in that exact order for the same reasons.
I knew we had smart listeners, Larry. It's amazing. And my wife, who does book design, has Photoshop and all this. But for most of the work I do, I use the programs on that page.
Yeah.
And we're not alone. They are generally acknowledged as being extremely good. They're called freeware, which means there's no obligation, there's no payment. You can mail them a donation if you'd like to. But they are free to use, and they're an excellent way to decide whether you like to do image editing before you spend a lot of money on a big program.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even want to get into GIMP. I haven't got that far. I just want to do the basics, and that takes up too much time, basics.
There's a program on that on that site called Photo Filter, which I use extensively. The fellow who wrote the program is both a programmer and a graphic artist, so he really knows how to achieve certain effects relatively easily, and I use that program constantly.
Hmm. I just got into using Photoscape more recently, and I'm just amazed. I was looking for a program that would do collages, you know, many pictures on one screen, and it was so easy, it's like falling off a log.
The program that he's talking about is called Photoscape, and again, it's on that list. It allows you to put in a template that has, you know, a pattern to it, and just drag pictures into that frame and make one single picture. And it's excellent. It's amazing these are free. I'm astounded by the things you can get at no cost.
Yeah. Well, the one that I don't see on there is Picasa, and I've really enjoyed using Picasa.
There are several other free ones out there. These just happen to be the ones I'm most familiar with and that I can recommend because I actually use them myself.
Yeah.
Okay, it's my question.
Mm.
I've got a Fuji film camera here, and it's 6.3 megapixels, and it's a Finefix A600, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it just eats batteries like crazy, and this is like from day one, so I thought, well, maybe my batteries are bad. So I go out and I buy more and more newer sets of nickel metal hydride batteries. And when they get down to about 132, 1.32
milliamps. Volts, yeah, yeah.
The camera goes dead, and after I pull them out of the charger, I get 148, 142, maybe 146 on them,
mm-hmm.
and 1.46, I should say. And the next day, the batteries say 138, 137. And I'll put them in the camera, and when I go to shoot, it might be dead. And if I put them in fresh, often I don't even put them in because I'm afraid they'll just burn up the batteries in the camera. I'll put them in fresh, and I'll get 3, 4, 5, 6 flash pictures, and that's it.
Hmm. Oh.
I don't know specifically what the problem is. Now, number one, Fuji cameras, and they are working on expanding dynamic range. And so they are still using something called a charged coupled device. They have a chip called a Super CCD. And as opposed to there's a less expensive and less power-sucking sensor called a CMOS. And part of the reason may be that because they are using the CCD to achieve a greater dynamic range, the CCD does draw more power. I don't know if there's any setting on that camera. I've seen some devices that you have to tell the camera what kind of battery you're putting in it. You might look into that, but that's unusual because I've got Fujis myself, and generally speaking, I haven't had too much trouble with them. Many older cameras will just use up batteries quickly, but what you may want to look into the highest capacity AAs that are out there. You can buy ones now that are 2,500 milliamps, and they may last a bit longer, but that's the best I could suggest. CCDs do use more power than the CMOS chips do.
All right. Good luck, Harold. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Want to give some more people a chance to get on here, so we'll go to Adam in Rockford, Illinois next. Adam, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Kodak Z710 that I bought a couple years ago, and it's got a Carl Zeiss lens.
Mm-hmm.
On it, and I recently, you know, I like taking pictures of hawks and stuff out in my yard that are not real far away, but say 30 yards away or something like that. So I bought a aftermarket telephoto lens that's like a 3.2x that screws right over the original lens, and it seems like it doesn't the pictures aren't really very clear, and I was wondering if this is just kind of what happens when you start stacking lenses up, or, you know, maybe I should start looking at getting a like an SLR, like more of a body, a professional body style camera with telephoto lenses, or if, you know, what your thoughts were on the cloudiness and
You've come to the correct conclusions. The aftermarket screw-on lenses will never deliver anywhere near the same quality as a telephoto lens on a single-lens reflex. They have been making add-on lenses ever since box cameras. And the thing we always say is, if they really did the job, why are there cameras with removable lenses?
Yeah.
You know. So yeah. I'm afraid that, your answer is, if you want to take those kind of pictures, you should get a camera with removable lenses and then buy, you know, a relatively good telephoto lens and put it on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. Bill in Madison is up next. Hi, Bill.
Good afternoon. I've been a film photo shooter for, like, 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my mid-60s, so I'm going into the digital with a little trepidation. Mostly, I want to pick up a fairly decent one, non-SLR, for a little better than snapshot, but more family-type photos.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there is a way to look at something that might have a little broader ISO range.
Well, again, they are working on that right now. What kind of lens mount did you have in your film cameras?
Well, being a dedicated Canon user, I set myself up for a total failure there because, of course, they changed their lens.
Yeah, you've got the FD mount. Mm. Yeah, I'm afraid.
Well, I also have two of the ESOs, but. Or the
EOS lenses.
EOSs,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
They have changed a couple of the connections on those so that my lenses are more than 4 years or 5 years old, so they don't work with the digital body.
Ah, that's too bad. Yeah, that's a shame.
Or that would have been the direction I would have gone, yeah.
Sure, sure. The what I would be doing is, again, the dynamic range challenge is improving constantly, and part of it is being solved by the higher megapixels. There are easily 12-megapixel cameras out there now, and just like having a larger negative size back in the days of the debate between 35mm and roll film, the roll film always had a better dynamic range because there was just more information on the piece of film. Same thing's happening with the sensors. A 12-megapixel sensor will have more room for the information than a 4-megapixel one.
Well, I should look at something 10 or above.
I would suggest that's the way things are going, and I would definitely look into that. I tend to lean towards real camera manufacturer brands.
That was my next question. Is there a difference in the chip size or chip type that they're using in the?
Not terribly. Many of them are using the same sensor, but each of them has the different post-processing. And as several of my camera store friends say, you know, people forget to look at the lens. You can have the best sensor in the world in the camera, and if there's a Coke bottle on the front of it,
yeah,
it's not going to work. So I would really be very particular to try to find a decent lens with a good aperture and also some controls that you can work with intuitively.
Well, I did notice that some of them are using even people like Zeiss to make their lenses.
Yeah, the Zeiss makes them. Leica has some lenses out there. There are some very good lenses. And quite frankly, Sony does a very good job. So really, any of the camera brand names that you can think of, they've got a long history and a reputation to work with. And I get to look at a lot of these because people bring them in for tutorials. And quite frankly, there's a lot of good stuff out there now. There really is.
Good luck.
Is there a source for technical data that I can go to that'll help me narrow it down a little bit?
Well, again, if you go online, I don't work for Steve's Digicams, nor do I write for them. But I must admit, they've got a lot of good information. And go to the manufacturer's websites, because some of them have extremely detailed information on the mechanics of their cameras.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. And Paul from St. Louis, I believe, is on the road. Paul, hello.
Hi. I just heard a gentleman call in about having a problem with batteries in his Fuji camera. And I had a similar problem with an Nikon. And it would eat batteries up. I could have the batteries one day, and the very next day they'd be dead. And I got turned on to these Energizer lithiums. They're actually really light, and I've been able to keep them in the camera for months.
Oh, so the Energizer lithiums.
Yeah, those are single-use batteries, but they do hold a charge for a long, long time. I do like rechargeables because they're ecological and you can save some money on them as well. Another thing that people tend to do, though, is they leave the flash on automatic, which means whenever it needs the flash, it fires, and that's constantly charging the flash circuit. If you're outdoors on a bright, sunny day, go to your button on the back of the camera, turn your flash off. And also, if you're outside and you've got a camera with an optical viewfinder, as well as the little screen on the back, and it's a bright, sunny day, and you can't see the electronic finder, turn it off. That's one of the major things that uses up battery power.
Oh, interesting. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Steve in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Well, the question may be related to batteries. Recently purchased a Canon A720IS.
Yeah.
And one thing I've noticed about it, and I've kind of read in the reviews prior to buying it, is that the recharge time for the flash seems quite a bit longer than I anticipated. And I'm not sure if I could change some of that with the batteries that I'm using.
No, I don't think so. The battery really is kind of like a gas tank. I mean, basically, you can get a larger capacity battery, but it won't feed the power any more quickly. It's possible. I'm not familiar with that particular model specifications. One reason why it may take longer is it's possible it may be a more powerful flash. Some of the flashes on point-and-shoot cameras, for example, only go around 10 feet. So if they put a more powerful flash in that goes out another 5 or 10 feet, it would probably take longer to fill the capacitor. That's just a guess, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for calling, Steve. Amy and Racine, your turn. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I know next to nothing about cameras. I've always just used those point-and-shoot recyclable things.
Yeah.
But I'd like to get a digital camera, and it needs to be very light because I do backpacking. I do a lot of other kind of tripping where it's real important. And also, I need to be able to use batteries, not rechargeable, because where I am, there's no place to plug it in. So I wondered if you could recommend something for me or recommend where I could start.
What kind of pictures do you take when you're out there?
I have limited actually to people pictures because you can't do much scenery with the kind of cameras that I carry with me.
Yeah.
So I'd like to be able to do scenery pictures distance away, but I'd also like to be able to do close up of plants, basically plants, because any animal pictures are going to be in the distance.
Yeah.
I think I need somewhat of a zoom on it.
Yeah, you're doing a very sensible approach to it because you know the limitations of the kind of camera you want to carry. Almost every manufacturer now has a shirt pocket size camera that will fit your needs. It has a reasonable zoom lens on it.
Uh-huh.
Now, what you have to do though is limit it down to the ones that use standard AA penlight batteries,
as opposed to
The rechargeable kind that are a funny shape that you can't buy anyplace.
Okay, right. Okay.
So the first thing you have to ask him is, when you go to the store, I need a compact camera that takes AA batteries. And that will narrow the field considerably, but you'll end up with something good.
What's that?
If it's compact, is it necessarily light?
Oh, these cameras are the size of a pack of cards, and they don't weigh that much at all.
No.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
If anything, they you can lose them out of your shirt pocket or not realize that they're gone.
Exactly. And buy some kind of little case for them to protect that back screen, which frequently does not have a cover on it.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Good luck, Amy. Thanks for calling. And Joe in Hortonville, I believe, is next. Joe, hello.
Hi, how's it going today?
Good, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm hearing a lot about batteries out there, and I used to be a camera store manager for years and sold a lot of cameras, and about 90% of the problems that came across the counter were battery-related. And one thing that we discovered along the way and through the years, and I know that used to be more prevalent when you had a film camera and auto winders and stuff like that, where the batteries generally for those motorized functions were very high-drain applications and would take quite a bit of battery juice. But, of course, now with digital cameras, there's no motor film drive anymore. But I guess the reason I called was with regard to rechargeable batteries, it's been my experience especially when you're using SLRs and things that, you know, you're trying to be very particular about your light meter readings. We found that the voltage on rechargeable batteries is not as consistent as a throwaway type of fresh alkaline. So, like, if you're using AA batteries for something, let's say your camera takes AA batteries, and that's running a light meter, maybe a motor winder or whatever, all the electronics in the camera are being controlled by those two AA's. We found that meter readings and consistent exposure results occur much more consistently with a fresh alkaline than they do with a rechargeable AA, because the voltage is more consistently up at 1.5 volts versus the 1.37 or whatever those AA's are that yeah. recharge. And, you know, for those of you that maybe have a particular, are a little more particular about your exposures, you're going to find that the throwaways actually give you a better result than a rechargeable battery.
I always suggest that even if you are using rechargeables, that you always carry a pair of disposables in your bag just in case.
Yeah.
Now, the trouble, of course, now is that an increasing number of digital cameras no longer use AA's. They use a lithium-ion battery that's specially shaped and only requires a special charger. So you, pretty soon you won't have the option of using throwaways.
Yeah.
But, I have not had that same exact experience, although I've had some electronic devices that did not like the slightly lower voltage of a rechargeable battery.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe, for calling. Appreciate it. John in Brookfield, your turn. Hi, John.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Yes. My question is regarding scanning of slides into a digital medium, and I'm wondering if there's a web page out there that compares the products that are available to do that.
I haven't run across one specifically. Again, you might try going to shutterbug.net, as they have discussed that. There are basically two kinds of slide scanners. There are consumer ones, and I have one of these Epson all-in-one jobs that has, you know, that does copies and all this.
Yeah.
And it, for my needs, it does a pretty good job. Meanwhile, down the hall from me, where there's a local newspaper, they have a very high-end Minolta slide negative scanner that costs many hundreds of dollars more than my scanner did, and they're using it for very particular applications. Regardless of which way you do it, it is still going to be time-consuming.
Mm.
There's just nothing out there so far I've seen that you can just drop a whole box of slides into a hopper and have it scan all of them. And for the higher the quality of the scan, the longer it will take to make it. I mean, it could take you 4 minutes to scan one slide.
Whoa.
So you're going to have to do some homework and decide where your pain level is in terms of price versus quality.
Right. I've seen where HP now has a scanner that takes 12 slides at a time. And I think they have the software that eliminates the dust in the dust
yeah.
particles in the slides. I think that software comes with that scanner. I'm not sure. I have to research.
Check it out. Yeah.
If you can get that, it's great. They used to call it digital ice, I believe, and it's pretty neat stuff. But that's becoming standard issue on the higher end scanners, and maybe it's trickling down to the lower end ones. But even if you have a flatbed scanner with a little frame that you can drop in, you can get surprisingly good results as long as you're not trying to make gigantic prints.
Yeah. Makes good sense. John, I thank you very much. And Jack, thank you so much for being with us. I hope you'll come back and do this again.
Anytime.
Appreciate it very much. Take a look at Jack's website. It's acpress.com. Lots of great stories on there, some freeware and some good information about a lot of things relating to that digital camera. Really appreciate it. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. And one of the things he's got on there is the mixed media CD that he's developed, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. That's worth it, I think, for a lot of people. So, appreciate him being with us. Tomorrow, Bob Tomesch, senior lecturer in the UW-Madison Department of Horticulture, joins us. He's with the UW Extension as well to talk gardening here on the Ideas Network.